This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
Here was David Culley's assessment of the Texans' opponent this Sunday, the Cleveland Browns.
Well, I mean, you know, they've got a defensive end there that's a pretty good player in this league. And they also have Clowney, who are two good rushers, you know, Garrett and he. It's a defense that I think has got a bunch of new players this year that they brought in. And I thought in this past game that we're watching the video of the Kansas City game, I thought they did a really nice job in that game of containing a very, very good offensive football team. And then offensively, they got a lot of weapons. You know, they got a very good quarterback. They got probably the two best combo running backs in the game. They got guys that they got skill all over the place and a very good offensive line. It's a big challenge. We kind of look at those guys as we talk about during the course of the year. You're going to play teams that are what you consider like playoff caliber teams, guys that have been there, guys that are expected to be there, teams that are. And we feel like we're playing one of those teams this week.
Yeah, this is on paper one of the best teams they play all year, Seth. There's no question about that.
When I'm watching the Kansas City versus Browns last week, and I'm only three quarters through it, Sean, so don't spoil the ending.
Spoiler alert.
I mean, obviously, I know the outcome, but I kind of forgot exactly what happened in the fourth quarter, and I know. So just hold on, okay? Don't tell me yet.
Yeah.
There's two things you can't spoil for me. One is Ted Lasso.
Right.
The other is the fourth quarter of the Browns-Chiefs game.
Yeah.
But as Cully said there, they have a really good defensive end, and they also have Jadeveon Clowney. Which is the way he phrased
that
it.
So
got a defensive end there that's a pretty good player in this league. And they also have Clowney.
When you isolate it like that, it sounds like an insult.
I know. After that, he said, who's also very good. But
says you.
Play that one more time, Ben.
They've got a defensive end there that's a pretty good player in this league. And they also have Clowney.
Because he chuckles at the beginning, it sounds like he's setting up a joke.
I like to envision David Culley winking at the camera right after he said that, doing the little guns like pow pow.
I hope nobody in Cleveland picks up on that and sends just that clip without the extra to Clowney, because Clowney plays well when he's motivated, when he's got an axe to grind, and then when he's got somebody like Myles Garrett on the other side of him, especially when Clowney went to Seattle, he was really the only pass rusher on that team for the most part, because of just talent and injuries. He was the guy, so he really couldn't necessarily do much. And then when he got to Tennessee last year, he was banged up himself. It was a bad excuse. Listen to me, I'm burping on air like I got no couth. So yes, they are good. But anyway, when I was watching the Chiefs versus the Browns, that's when I realized, all right, the Texans played really well and matched up well against the Jaguars. They played a very good and clean football game, and they throttled the Jaguars. That's awesome. Watching these two teams was the very stark reminder that, okay, the talent level, your top-end guys for the Browns are just head and shoulders above the top-end guys for the Texans.
Yep.
And which doesn't mean that you can't beat them, but, man, you got to play a really good game. You got to be an incredibly disciplined football team. You got to have some guys really shine to overcome those two defensive ends that we're just talking about, to overcome Baker Mayfield, Jarvis Landry, all these guys. Chubb especially, Nick Chubb. I mean, Chubb had some runs in that game that the Texans simply don't have the running backs who could have done the same thing with that same blocking. So, yeah, it's a tall task beating the Cleveland Browns.
Who's the scariest one specifically for the Texans? What matchup scares you the most in this game?
I would say it's either going to be Nick Chubb himself. Well, Chubb and Kareem Hunt together, the 1-2 punch.
Yep.
Because we really don't know. The Jaguars didn't try to run the ball that much because they were behind for most of the day. So we didn't really get a chance to see how good this Texans run defense is. Mm-hmm. You know, they did some good things, but they didn't get a genuine and real test. They'll get a genuine and real test in this game. And then beyond that, I think it's going to be Baker Mayfield and his brain versus the Texans defense.
Yeah.
Because the Texans defense, they're going to have to play a lot of zone to make up for some of the talent deficiencies that they have. And there's going to be holes in those zones. The linebackers need to get better. They need to really make some improvements over these next few weeks if they want to actually compete versus the good teams. So Baker Mayfield and his tight end, whether it's Njoku or Austin Hooper, whoever else over the middle, Jarvis Landry over the middle, all these guys, I just don't want to see them really exploit this Texans defense. So that comes down to the pass rush, really helping those guys out as much as possible.
No doubt. That's it for me, man. That middle part of the field where guys were, honestly, that Jacksonville game, a lot of guys running wide open that Trevor Lawrence just didn't hit. And some of it was the Texans defensive front getting him knocked off his spot. Some of it was Trevor Lawrence just being inaccurate and not having very good touch. That's the part that scares me, Seth, is you think of a Kevin Stefanski offense. He's a branch off of the Kubiak tree. I am terrified of Baker Mayfield. This team, you know, selling out to try to stop the run because Chubb and Kareem Hunt are their two best offensive weapons. And then Baker Mayfield just, you know, bootleg all day long and finding Njoku at one level, Jarvis Landry at that next level, and guys just running wide open over the middle of the field.
The Jaguars had a ton of drops in that game.
Yep.
I think they had the highest drop rate in the NFL or the highest total of drops. Whatever it was, it wasn't pretty. But at least part of that was on Trevor Lawrence. I mean, he had very little touch early in the game, especially. I think he settled down a little bit. But those first three drops he had were kind of a little bit behind guys and rifled 180 miles an hour, especially like to James Robinson, the running back. So it was a little bit on both the receivers and Trevor Lawrence, but I don't think you're going to get that from the Browns this week. You're going to get a more experienced quarterback and better, more sure-handed receivers.
Let's go to Richmond and talk to Tony. Tony, you're up on Payne and Pendergast. What's happening?
Hey, guys. Good morning. I wanted to have a little theory on Deshaun Watson. I wanted to, you know, get your opinion on.
Okay.
Initially, whenever he wanted out, I was all on board. I'm a big Texans fan, but I know how dysfunctional the organization has been. And then over time, I kind of thought about it, and I was like, well, they did make you the second highest paid quarterback. And, you know, just thinking back on it, by all accounts, they hired a respectable guy in Nick Caserio. And my question is this to y'all, and, you know, I don't think anyone really knows his answer, but I just want to get your opinion on it. What do you think the chances are that he knew that some of these charges were coming down from some of these massage therapists and just kind of want to get out of Houston partially?
Yeah,
that's
something I've wondered myself because, you know, when Ashley Solis went to a couple of attorneys before she found Tony Busby, and, you know, the timelines get a little bit hazy here. I mean, look, Deshaun Watson himself has a pretty speckled memory of a lot of this, you know, according to reports. You know, according to the reports about him reaching out to massage therapists several weeks later without even realizing or remembering that he had been with them before. So there's a lot that gets a little confusing with the timeline. I do wonder if maybe there was reason for Deshaun to believe like the walls were closing in on him. That if Ashley Solis had been looking for an attorney for a little while, and maybe some of these other women might have either complained or word had gotten back to Deshaun. Maybe that was part of it too. I don't know ultimately what that matters at the end of the day, other than I guess it's just more to add to the soap opera of all of it.
Yeah. I wonder, boy, there's so many layers to that, Seth. Look, Deshaun Watson signed the second highest contract in the history of the league at the time. 6 months into this, you know, this series of massage sessions, like the very the beginning of all the lawsuits, the dates that the services were administered, coincides with the beginning of COVID, right? The furthest one back is March of 2020. So Deshaun had been doing all this stuff when he alleged stuff he's being accused of. It had started up 6 months before he signed his contract. So I wonder, at the time he signed his contract, if he knew of any of that. I wonder, as the caller said, how much did he feel like might be coming down the pipe when he demanded a trade? I'll say this about the trade demand, is that if we're just looking at what the obvious answer based on the behavior of everybody involved is, it does line up that Deshaun was just fed up with how the organization was running things, that he demanded the trade, because we learned of the trade demand the day that Casario's hiring was reported by, you know, wasn't announced by the team yet, but it was reported because Deshaun did a press conference the day before that where he seemed to be all in on still being with the team. And then the Casario hiring gets announced. We know that the team had solicited input from Deshaun on the hires, and we know now how the hiring of Casario came about. That all seems to line up for me to where I believe it was the way the team was handling their business that was the trigger event for Deshaun.
But the thing that's impossible to know, though, too, is, okay, all that does line up, but asking you to be traded is a pretty extreme response to all of that. Like, unprecedented. That's an unprecedented... I can't think of a time where a guy's asked for a trade so soon after signing such a lucrative contract, that maybe that was part of the milieu of what was going on. When you talk about people's overall stress levels or how they're responding to various things, I have zero clue. Maybe someday there will be a tell-all about it. I'm just trying, and I'm thinking about that a little in myself. I've never been in a situation like Deshaun's, but I've been in situations where it felt like I was, like, there was just too much going on that was beyond my control that I just wanted out. Yep. I just wanted to leave town. This is back when I was in high school. And I left out. I quit school. I quit high school and I left. It wasn't because I was in legal trouble or anything. I just didn't know how to handle all the stuff that was going on in my life. It doesn't make rational sense, but maybe he was in some kind of a fight or flight mode where all this stuff was going wrong and he just flat out wanted out at that point.
How is the team handling Deshaun Watson right now? One report of it came out earlier this week. We'll let you hear it next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast. Sports Radio 610, Houston Texans breaking news.
All right, a little bit of Houston Texans breaking news. Aaron Wilson is the first one I saw report this. According to a source, Texans placing linebacker Kevin Pierre-Louis on injured reserve. I don't know that this is a massive surprise. He's been banged up throughout training camp. He missed the game on Sunday with a leg injury. I know one of the practices I was at fairly late in training camp, he came up limping at a practice. He was concussed for a big part of training camp. He was in the concussion protocol. He's just, Kevin Pierre-Louis was a guy I was kind of enthusiastic about, Seth. He started most of the season last year for a really good Washington defense, so I was kind of excited to see what kind of athleticism and production he could bring to the linebacker position for this team. He hadn't been able to get on the field, so he's on IR now, and with the chance to come back down the road.
So Grugier Hill will replace him. The linebackers didn't do a great job in this game on Sunday versus the Jaguars. I thought Kirksey was all right. Cunningham and Grugier Hill, Had some bad snaps in coverage against the run at times. There were some bad moments by these guys, and that's where Cruiser Hill's got a lot of potential. He's got a lot of athleticism. I think these are one of the areas where you're hoping over the course of the first few weeks you see guys just settle in and get comfortable in the defense, and get comfortable with what Lovie Smith is asking them to do, because this is also a defense. It's supposed to be a linebacker-friendly defense. Now, linebacker-friendly could mean two things. It could mean, hey, if you're really good, you rack up a whole lot of stats in this defense. But it could also mean, well, there's also a lot of pressure on those guys to be really good, and if they're not, it really hurts your defense. And that's what you need. Cruiser Hill and you need Zach Cunningham, frankly, to get a lot better in a couple of different areas.
Did you see Zach Cunningham's rating on Pro Football Focus this week?
I know it was low. I don't know if I would have. I think it was like one of the lowest in the league, wasn't it?
He was rated 84th at the linebacker position out of 84 linebackers. He was literally had the lowest rating at the linebacker position around the league.
Yeah, he had some really rough moments in pass coverage where he doesn't look comfortable. I mean, he looks like a high school kid when you teach kids how to play zone defense in high school and they're just dropping back to a spot on the field and standing there and kind of like waiting to see, okay, I'm in my zone. And like they might be oblivious to the fact that there's a running back or a wide receiver just standing 5 yards away from him waiting for the ball. He looks a little bit like that sometimes. And this has always been the problem with Cunningham. He's awesome against the run. He comes up and he makes huge plays, but then he's equally bad in pass coverage. And sometimes I think one of the reasons he's good against the run is he's up lurking and stalking the line of scrimmage, where he needs to be more of a two-way player. I'm just hoping that he really thrives under Lovie Smith's tutelage and starts figuring it out, because they need him to. And he's one of the higher paid guys on your team. And he's capable. I guess that's the frustrating thing is he's plenty capable of doing it. He's really, really fast. He should be able to run with just about anybody. He should be able to carry guys up the seam when they need him to. But he just, either because he doesn't want to, doesn't work hard enough at it, or maybe just doesn't have a natural aptitude for it. He just looks kind of lost back there sometimes.
Here is Jay Glazer from Fox on the Texans' current handling of Deshaun Watson.
I don't see a scenario where Deshaun Watson ever plays for the Texans again. And the wild part is he's still working out for the team because he's still on their active roster, but they're keeping him separated from everybody else on the roster. They want this to be Tyrod Taylor's team. Lately, they've let it be known that, well, he could be traded for 3 ones plus a combination of 3 picks or players. They already had that. They had 3 ones and 3 threes going into the NFL draft. They had 4 teams who were really interested back then. They said, absolutely not. We're not trading him. Weren't taking any of the offers. I think that they really overshot their step in this.
Okay.
Sounds like it, to say the least.
Sorry, guys. Didn't mean to say
that. Sounds like it, to say the least. Screw yourselves, everybody.
So
you know what? This is another guy that doesn't mention that Deshaun Watson has a no-trade clause. Yeah. And that like these offers, they claim, oh, the Texans got an awesome offer. They got an awesome offer. And they never once mention that there were conditions attached to that offer. That it wasn't just they got such and such draft picks. It was that, yeah, they got draft picks, but the team wanted to be able to pull back some of those draft picks if Deshaun gets in trouble or gets suspended or what have
you. Well, he doesn't. That was Jay Glazer, by the way. I don't know who was, you know, kind of throwing in the colloquialisms at the end there. But that was Jay Glazer with the report. To me, the irresponsible part about that report, this is actually an item that we talked about last week, but that's the audio of it right there. So we finally got to hear, you know, sort of the context surrounding it there. And to me, the irresponsible part about that, Seth, is define what you mean by before the draft. Because if the Texans got that offer before the lawsuit started flying and they didn't accept it, then I kind of understand that. Like, you go, okay, 3 ones and 3 threes, pretty good offer, but I would need to know which teams were offering that. You know, was it a team that had a top 5 pick, or was it a team that was picking in the 20s somewhere? That matters. That's material, especially if it were going into the 2021 draft where the Texans had no ones or twos in that draft. If it was an offer that was made before the draft, like the week before the draft, like Deshaun's already been sued by 22 people, and some team made that offer and there were no conditions attached to it, then I would be critical of the Texans for not taking 3 ones and 3 threes
Right.
But Glazer doesn't specify what he means by before the draft, and he doesn't specify what conditions, if any, were attached to those picks. And as you mentioned as well, doesn't touch on the fact that Deshaun has a lot of control over where he does and doesn't go in this whole thing.
The thing that, and I'll forgive some of the TV guys when they have only like 30 seconds to break three news items or what have you, that they can't cover all the details in an incredibly complex scenario, which is that, as soon as you start blaming the Texans for not trading Deshaun for the right amount, the quote-unquote right amount of money, like, at what point do you decide to not also mention, by the way, Deshaun's being alleged to have sexually assaulted 22 different women. You know, 24 different women. Like, that makes it really tough to know how exactly to operate moving forward and what the actual going rate is for Deshaun Watson. It's the most asinine thing in the world. And look, the Texans deserve a whole lot of scrutiny and criticism for a whole lot of things, but that doesn't mean that somehow the Texans are supposed to magically know exactly what you're supposed to do in a situation like this where your star quarterback is being accused by 24 different women of sexual assault.
Yeah.
It just doesn't. There's just flat out. If you act or pretend like you know exactly what the going rate should be in this situation, you're lying. You're fraudulent. It's just ridiculous. So all these people saying, oh, they could have gotten rid of Deshaun for this, that, or the other thing. Are you going to tell me that if the Dolphins flat out offered six high draft picks with no conditions attached, that you were going to stand up there and say, oh, yeah, that was a good move by the Dolphins. That was the smart thing to do. Like, no, of course not.
Right.
Which means that's not what was offered.
Yeah.
It's just, you know what's getting old, Sean? It's that the Texans are a punching bag for good reasons. Like, they've earned that designation at times. But that doesn't mean that basically you can just say whatever you want about the Texans and it makes it accurate, it makes it right.
Right.
Or that any little thing that the Texans do must be wrong because it's the Texans. Yeah, these teams are supposedly offering great deals for a guy that's being a kid, like, that we don't even know is going to play sometime in the next 2 years. But the Texans are the one that are to blame. Okay, I got it.
Yeah. The last thing he dropped in there, which I think he tried to make sound kind of ominous, was, they had four teams that were really interested in, quote, most of them have all dropped out. So I don't know what most or all, if they all dropped out or most dropped out. Either way, he kind of drops that in there, kind of, to me, implying that, boy, the market, they should have jumped on this because the market's dried up. These teams have all dropped out. The thing I am least worried about is there being suitors for Deshaun Watson when the time comes to trade him. It may not be the same four or five teams that they were dealing with in March or February of last year, but there will be five or six teams that will be in the Deshaun Watson business again when he becomes a tradable asset. I'm the least concerned about there being a market for Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, it's frustrating when so many of these guys just, like, they swoop down in on the story for a minute, and they're like, oh, wow, yeah, I guess you should have. Hey, you know what you should have done? You should have bought stock in Apple 20 years ago or 30 years ago. Right. It was obvious you should have done it. Like, yeah, okay. Yeah, there's plenty of things that obviously you should have done. It doesn't mean that it was obvious at the time and that was the right move. And I just thought, ever since the allegations came out, I'm highly skeptical that there was, like, a lucrative offer for Deshaun Watson. Everybody's in wait-and-see mode at this time.
Agreed. All right, so the Texans have the Browns this Sunday. Browns, one of the most talented rosters in the NFL. One measurement for what the Texans might be up against. We'll play the little game. How many Texans would clearly start for the Browns this Sunday? Next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so the Browns have a really talented roster. Crazy to think this was a team that was 1-31 over a two-year period not all that long ago. They've done a good job of restocking the talent there, and they're one of the most talented rosters top to bottom in the league. They'll go as far as Baker Mayfield takes them. Sunday, they are a 12.5-point favorite, last I checked, over the Houston Texans, which begs the question, Seth. Let's play the little game that we will probably play every time the Texans play a vastly superior team on paper this year. The little game called How Many Houston Texans Would Clearly Start for the Opponent? In this case, the Cleveland Browns. How many Texans going into this Sunday do you think would clearly start for this Cleveland Browns team?
Well, okay. There's guys that are capable of starting for the Browns, but would they beat up the guy at their respective position?
Yes.
I wish you hadn't asked me this question, Sean, because there aren't there are
is the answer scaring you?
The answer is scaring me a little bit, because usually even on good teams, you take a good team, you take a bad team. The bad team at least has a few guys that are good, or, you know, Pro Bowl caliber players, but, you know, and better than, and a lot of bad teams have guys that aren't all that good. The problem is that the Browns have some guys that aren't all that good, but they happen to be at positions where the Texans aren't all that good either. But then in the positions where the Browns have good players, like they're really, really good, yeah. And the Texans don't have anybody good at all. So, yeah, across the board, really, the only two guys that I could point to and say for sure would definitely have a spot would probably be, I think, Brandon Cooks and Laremy Tunsil.
Because
Brandon Cooks is better than either Peoples-Jones. Jarvis Landry is more like, Brandon Cooks is going to be one of the top two receivers on the Browns.
Even when if Odell Beckham Jr. were healthy, would you rather
question. Yeah. If you're only going to name two starters, because Jarvis Landry, if you call him the slot, maybe, and then I would say that Odell Beckham Jr. would be one of the starters, and then Peoples-Jones, yeah, then Brandon Cooks would be Peoples-Jones, but for this week, where Odell Beckham Jr. isn't the starter, then yeah.
You know what? I've never been a huge Jarvis Landry guy. I think Jarvis Landry is, yeah, I think he's solid enough. But I think Brandon Cook's game, man. I think he's got that speed to beat you downfield. I know he's always been a guy that obviously gets moved around a lot. You know, he's been traded a bunch of times. But I don't know, man. I think you can make an argument Brandon Cooks versus Jarvis Landry. Look, Odell Beckham Jr. has been the least productive of those three guys over the last 12 to 18 months, but he's got the highest ceiling of any of them, Odell Beckham Jr. does. So it's hard to make that argument just based purely on talent. But we're saying clearly start. So you're right. If Odell Beckham Jr. were there, Brandon Cooks probably doesn't clearly start if they're starting two receivers. I think he would clearly start this week, but probably not in other weeks. Yeah, Tunsil might be the only one.
Somebody's saying Tunsil and at center. Look, I like Justin Reed a lot, but
Justin Britt.
JC Treader has been a better center than Justin Britt has. So yeah, I like Justin Britt a lot, and I think there's still some moments where he looks a little bit rusty, like a guy that hasn't played in a year and was coming off an ACL from 2 years ago. But I think over the next few games, you're going to feel a lot like better and better about him. But JC Treader's a really good center, so I don't think he wouldn't start right there. I'm not just saying that because he went to Cornell, Sean.
I forgot about that. I forgot that he was a.
I got every now and then. Every now and then there's a Cornell guy in the NFL. I gotta be sure.
How many have there been?
I gotta go all Andy Bernard on you. I went to a little place. Maybe you've ever heard of it. It's called Cornell. Yeah.
How many Cornell guys have made it to the NFL?
I don't know, like a couple dozen, in the modern NFL. Yeah. There's not that many. Like a few of us. Only a few of us have been solid and steady starters. Remember Kevin? Oh, I'm blanking on his name. He's an offensive lineman for the Giants. I can't believe I'm blanking on his name right now. But yeah, a few linemen. That's
okay.
Pretty much it.
Okay, gotcha. 713-572-4610. So we settled on two as the answer of how many Houston Texans would start for the Browns this Sunday. Would start for the Browns. 713-572-4610. If you want to text in any other ones you think deserve argument.
People are saying Justin Reed, and yeah, maybe. I mean, if Justin Reed keeps out, you got to remember Justin Reed didn't have a good year last year. So teams are going to be looking at it as saying like, okay, well, am I going to look at the Harrison kid that got thrown out? I think Ronnie Harrison is a safety that they really like. He's the guy that got into the scuffle with the Kansas City Chiefs coach on the sideline last week. I don't think he's suspended for this game. But John Johnson's a good safety too.
He paid him a lot of money.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's so clear that Justin Reed would have starting for this team. But yeah, maybe he would be better than Harrison or beat out. So I'd say that Clark or Justin Reed could at least start. And especially Reed, I think that you could swap him out with Harrison and the Browns wouldn't be distraught about it.
Would Clowney be the best player on the Texans defense right now?
Boy, that's hard to say because It's hard to say because it's true. Yes, it's true. Yeah, he would be there.
It's hard to accept.
It's hard to... And I don't... Look, I'm long past bitching about that trade. Is it worth paying the money that you're paying for him and all that right now? Like, that's all water under the bridge. But I think Clowney's a dicey one because Clowney is so much better when he's got good players around him, which is obvious, right? You could say that about anybody. But with Clowney, it's really, really true. I don't think he's not the player like some great defensive linemen where it doesn't matter if they get double teamed, they're still going to get theirs. Clowney's not that guy. But he's going to make an impact when he's one of a couple or three guys that can be impact players on the defensive line. And the Browns do have that. So yeah, you're gonna get the best version of Jadeveon Clowney.
That's the real shame about the Jadeveon Clowney era here, Seth, is that other than 2018, it never really lined up to where you got what the Texans envisioned when they drafted Clowney number one overall, which is Clowney on one side, J.J. Watt on the other side, and those two wrecking shop for the rest of the decade. You keep in mind, when they drafted Clowney, J.J. Watt was only one Defensive Player of the Year award into his career. J.J. Watt had only been in the league 3 years at that point, and they draft Clowney, and then Clowney misses basically his whole rookie year because he tore the meniscus in his knee. He misses, which J.J. was arguably the best player in football that year in 2014. Then Clowney misses most of his second year because he's banged up again. J.J. wins Defensive Player of the Year again in 2015. And then in 2016, here comes Clowney. He's finally healthy. He's playing at a Pro Bowl level. J.J. Watt has back surgery twice, and he's done for the year. 2017, Clowney playing at a high level, super activated. J.J. Watt tears his knee or breaks his leg, whatever it was. 2018 was the only year where we really got to see both of those guys. And by then, it seemed like Bill O'Brien had already passed judgment on what he thought of Jadeveon Clowney, and nothing was going to keep Clowney here long-term on a big deal. Yeah. That's a major what-if that doesn't get talked about with the Texans a lot because they've done so many other things since then where you're like, oh my God, what if they don't make Bill O'Brien the general manager? What if they don't trade Hopkins? What if they don't get sideways with Watson? We forget, man, the real what-if those are all valid and much bigger impact than what I'm talking about. But it would be nice if the biggest what if that we were talking about was what if Clowney and Watt were healthy at the same time for 5 years, you know?
You know what somebody else mentioned, because the guy that'll be facing Jadeveon Clowney is either going to be Marcus Cannon, Charlie Heck, I don't know, maybe Jerron Christian, but likely either Marcus Cannon or Charlie Heck, because Charlie Heck is back. Marcus Cannon did a good job last week at right tackle. So those are the guys that will be charged with blocking Jadeveon Clowney. Somebody mentioned Marcus Cannon as a guy that might start for the Browns. I'm sorry, but he would not. Jack Conklin is the right tackle for the Browns. Like, this Browns team is stacked.
Yeah.
But I'm the first guy to say, all right, let's not get ahead of ourselves with a team before they really prove that they're even really genuinely a playoff team. You know, because they were kind of a fringe playoff team last year. They are on paper stacked. Yep. Everywhere you go, when we went through this little exercise, I kept looking at spots, and it's hard to find even just general relative blue collar guys.
Yep.
And the way they match up, like I said, the linebackers, I would say the Browns have a blue collar group of linebackers, but so do the Texans. Christian Kirksey, you might be able to swap out Christian Kirksey for Walker, their middle linebacker, and have it be a negligible difference. So that's one spot where I think the Texans have a player that could start over the Browns. But there really aren't a lot. This is a really stacked football team, which should get you excited, because look, if you got excited about last week where the Texans outperformed expectations, that this would be a game where if the Texans pulled it off somehow, and honestly, even if they remain competitive for four quarters with this team, that would be a huge coup. Like, go into this game knowing that on paper, the Browns are drastically better than the Texans. Drastically. So any amount of success the Texans have versus this Browns team is a win. Like, that's progress. That means you've got something going right, because you're really fighting above your weight class here if you're competing with these guys.
I think the other message you take away from this game, and we'll talk plenty about this game tomorrow, trust me, and we'll be talking about it all day here on the station today and tomorrow, getting you ready for Sunday against the Browns. But I think the other thing, Seth, is, if big picture, if you're a Texan fan, and I would guess if you're somebody who's running the Texans, either coaching or running personnel, the Browns are kind of what you aspire to be 3 years from now, right? a team that's stockpiled a bunch of draft capital, found a quarterback that, you know, we'll see what Mayfield is, but I think he's certainly in the upper half for sure. You know, probably around top 12 quarterback in the league, Baker Mayfield, somewhere around there. Not elite, but you know, a guy who this is a team that can win a Super Bowl is the bottom line. You know, that's where you're aspiring to be. The Browns at one point were a punching bag, a laughing stock, a punchline. And here we are 4 years later, and we're talking about how the Texans can't find more than two or three guys that would be able to start for the Cleveland Browns.
Right, you know? Yeah. And that's where – and the thing, though, too, where there's upside is that at some point you'll have draft picks coming back from Deshaun Watson. Hopefully a haul, who knows. But you also have all these veterans on one-year deals that as you start finding young talent, these guys are not – crippling you with their contracts on the cap. That's right. One big difference between Kasari and O'Brien is that O'Brien was paying more than he should for these blue collar guys, but also giving them multiple year deals.
Yep.
And that's where it gets painful, is that you're paying for the next year. Hey, you found a nice young guy, but you're still paying the guy he's replaced for two more seasons. That was the part that was really hard to swallow. So yeah, moving forward, they should be able to gradually, slowly replace a lot of these guys. Baker Mayfield, this is what I'd be nervous about watching Baker Mayfield last week and watching him and, you know, thinking about him versus the Texans. He's got a little bit of Favre in him, mm-hmm. in his ability to manipulate with his shoulders, where he's really, you can tell he's worked on his game in the backfield, like when he's executing his fakes and the RPOs and on the run game and the option game and everything, he's really doing everything very exaggerated. He's trying to manipulate defenders with his eyes. He's really being exaggerated with his shoulder shrugs and everything. So it's going to, he's taking advantage of undisciplined play on the part of the defense. So the Texans want to be very, very disciplined this week in coverage because Baker's taking his game up a notch.
Yep. That's good stuff. We'll talk plenty about the matchups tomorrow on this game for sure. Let's drop a phone call in here as we head towards the top of the hour. Eric's in Nebraska, presumably listening on the Odyssey app. What's going on, Eric?
I am. I was a little bit behind on your conversation earlier. I was listening when you guys were talking about Deshaun Watson and his trade value. Now, my question for you guys is, all that initial talk was very early before the new league season. Now, my question is, if they would have set something up before then and it got canceled, say, could it get canceled because it was before? I remember there was talks between you guys that saying that anything early that would have happened before the scandal came out could have possibly been null and voided.
Awesome. Okay. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you can't execute the trade until the league year begins. So, like Matt Stafford, that trade was agreed to pretty early on in the offseason, but they didn't actually execute it until the league year began. The first allegation was made public the day before the league year began.
Yep.
So, I've always operated under the assumption that presumably whichever team had agreed to a deal with Deshaun Watson or to trade for Deshaun Watson would have most likely said, well, hold on a second, partner. We got to figure this thing out. Now, maybe it still would have gone through. I mean, that's where maybe the Texans missed out on an opportunity there because they could have pushed it through at that point and said, okay, well, hey, here, we'll give you a condition on this or a condition on that. And maybe the team that was trading for him at that point, it would have only been one pick. Mm-hmm. So like maybe it still would have gone through. But the other side, and why I hesitate to engage in that kind of like wishful thinking, is that the best price for Deshaun Watson would have been sometime around the time that the 49ers decided to trade away their entire future to get up to number 3 in the draft.
Yep.
Like at that point, teams were still, and remember, it was coming off of COVID too, so teams were a little bit behind in their scouting process. Teams were still trying to figure out what they thought of all the young quarterbacks, where they were in the draft, all that stuff. So the best price for the Texans, if there were no allegations whatsoever, probably would have been sometime in the month or so before the draft. And that's why I completely excuse the Texans from the whole timing scenario.
Yeah.
I feel like if they would have agreed to a trade in February, people would have been skewering them for not waiting long enough and getting too little for Deshaun Watson.
No doubt. A reminder here, too, that with football back, it's only week two, so you still got a chance to get in on the Rocket Mortgage 2021 Pro Football Pick'em Contest. $10,000 up for grabs. Not too late to sign up. Text PICKS to 20357. I got 8 right last week. I think the lead host in the contest got 10 right. So I'm not in last place like I was at the beginning of last year. But you compete against me and other hosts from around the country. Just text PICKS to 20357. $1,000 up for grabs each and every week in the Rocket Mortgage 2021 Pick'em Contest.
Sean, the 49ers made that trade up on March 20, is either 25th or 26th.
Okay.
So I wonder, you do wonder, I mean, what exactly were the 49ers thinking about Deshaun Watson in early March?
No doubt.
Before the, because the allegations surfaced and the league year began March 10th, 11th,
March
12th,
17th. March 17th, the league year began. March 16th, the first lawsuit came out.
So presumably if the 49ers wanted Deshaun Watson, they would have made that trade sometime around that time. That was when they decided that they might not have decided to trade up in the draft until all of a sudden they realized, oh, wow, we're not, we got no shot at Deshaun Watson and there's no way we're trading for him.
Yep.
So there we go.
Yeah, there it is. There it is. Seth, we got a text. Someone said, quite the transformative show today, LOL. That's probably because we got this prediction from Dennis, a caller to the show a little bit earlier.
Look at how he got to Buffalo. He basically asked the GM, hey, are you guys going to cut me too? The response was, no, Kahawi, we're going to get you ready because you're going to be in the Pro Bowl. And when he gets the Super Bowl ring this year, I want you guys to remember what I said.
All right, so Dennis called this shot, Bills winning the Super Bowl with Pro Bowl tight end Kahawi wearing. That was the kind of show we had today, Seth.
And then I lost it. I flipped it. You know what? I lost it not because of anything he actually said about Kahawi wearing. It was Brandy was listening. She when he said, you know, this is what you guys are saying. Brandy was like, oh boy, this guy's brave.
She knows
because there's nothing that tips me off more than when somebody claims I said something that I didn't. That's where I lost it on our friend of Kahawi wearing.
Yep, yep.
I wish nothing but the best for Kahawi wearing, but don't try to talk trash about a guy that's not even on the Bills roster right now.
Right.
He's on the practice squad.
There it is. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies and smooth sailings to you, Sean.
There you go. All right, we're done. 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. We're back getting you ready. Football Friday tomorrow, baby. In the Loop is up next. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.
You're the worst possible friend you could ever possibly be. You should be ashamed of yourself. You should not eat for 3 days.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.